So struggle happens when you're operating outside of your unique perception process. That's why you can see many different people achieve great things. They just simply own how they process unconsciously.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
All right, good morning and welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. Today is another super special episode because we're going to talk about something that all of you guys already wonder about. And it's why smart people do stupid things. And honestly, I also wonder myself. Most days I consider myself a smart person, but I find myself picking up the Cheetos at 7-Eleven. Or sleeping way too late to finish this Netflix series when I know I shouldn't, or I have like an early morning meeting, or dating that guy that you know is wrong for you. So we've all been there, and I have a guest who will hopefully give us a little bit of insight why people that we consider who are smart, or even though we are on our smart days, still do stupid things. So here with me right now is Chris. Chris is a Bulger. Did I read that right? Sorry.
No one gets it right. Bulger. Think of like Folgers coffee, but with a B.
Bulger.
Yeah.
Okay. Is a hypnotist and coach with over 16 years of professional experience. Chris has worked with CEOs of Fortune 100 companies and their executive C-suites. Author and Guinness World Record-breaking athlete, Chris uses his self-created signature perception process to systematically transform the laziest of people into hustlers and overachievers into absolute anomalies. So, hey, Chris, how are you? And welcome.
What's going on? I'm doing pretty good.
What did you do today? How does a day in Chris Bulger's life look like? You have all these amazing stuff going on.
It's so funny because right before this podcast, I actually posted about it and I tagged you on one of those stories too. So I'll read you exactly. This was this morning. So far I had 4 calls. First call, one guy, he's lost his confidence 4 months ago, has no sales. On the call he got a sale from making moves after our hypnosis session. Then right after that, I jumped into another call, helped someone eliminate a lifelong fear of bridges in 35 minutes. Bridges. And we tested it. We tested it using Zoom. It's like to see the bridge. And then third was a 33-year-old marriage. She paused the divorce after seeing a blind spot that her therapist missed. And then fourth call was a business owner who made an extra $280,000 this past month because of a hypnotic technique I told him to add to his marketing about 3 weeks ago. So that was today. We hopped into this call and I have more calls later on. So it's a good day.
That's great. You're literally like the modern day Superman, just like saving people one Zoom call at a time. That should be like your slogan or something.
No, you see, Superman has weaknesses. We don't play that shit around here.
No weaknesses around here. Okay, well, you definitely live a very interesting life and a very unique job or business, no? So you help a lot of people get over like traumas, fears, turn them into from like 0 to 100 in such a short amount of time. So I would love to know, what is your story and how did you get to like what you're doing right now?
So I think everyone who has an expertise, they usually come from some kind of pain, and I'm no different. Like when I was a teenager, I suffered from anxiety and depression pretty bad. My school had a special disability rule designed just for me so that I could be in a specific place during like lockdowns and fire drills because they were just too overwhelming for me. Just the sounds and it was this crazy over-exaggerated stress response. I was an athlete though. I was in the addition. So on the outside, it looked like I had my life together, but really I couldn't be in a classroom without the fucking door being shut because that would freak me out.
Wow.
Was still going to therapy, was on medication for it. Medication made it worse. A lot of people experienced that. So I got right off of it. And then shortly after that, during the same time period, I was homeless.
Wow.
But you know how like we always hear the stories of like homeless to millionaire in like 6 months. And it's like they
Yeah.
weren't really homeless. They were fucking houseless. They were living in a friend's house. They're living in a Porsche.
Right. They're in between Airbnbs.
No, this was like I had nowhere to sleep. Like there's nowhere to like there was an alleyway. That was it. And that went on for like 2 years. It was a long time. But I didn't have any mentors. I didn't have anyone guiding me. I was just stuck in the same place for a very long time. And during that time, I was dating someone who was bipolar, and that was double difficult. I was working as a fitness trainer off commissions, but when you're anxious, it's hard to sell things. So I really didn't make anything. At most, I think I profited maybe $12 a month. It was really like this is such a not marketable story because it's so, a little bit too real, but like that's how it was. It's fucking embarrassing. And one night in July, a friend let me borrow his laptop and I was just looking for a different job. And after like the sixth or seventh job posting, I was like, fuck this. So I'm looking at talking cat videos now because I'm just vegging out. I'm like, you know what? I just want to break from all this crap. And by
Right.
the third or fourth talking cat video, I think back to like, how the hell did I get to this point? Like, how is somebody who is capable, physically, genetically designed for sports and combat, how am I can't fucking find a job or be or support myself?
Right.
And I thought back to a time when I was a kid and my on the TV I was watching, it was Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd, and Bugs Bunny gets a hypnosis kit from Acme and he hypnotizes Elmer Fudd to go after Daffy Duck. And in the other room, my mom and dad were fighting as they always did over money. My dad worked four jobs. My mom didn't work at all. So I went to the other room with full courage, thinking I can like solve this with hypnosis. And I go in between them, I push them away, and I say, "You two are acting like a bunch of kids." I thought that was funny as a kid. Fuck, as an adult, I thought it was pretty clever. But what that happened was they both turned to me and they told me why they were right in their argument. So I didn't realize it back then, but I was imprinted. I took on their crap for my now it's my crap. And now years later, here I am, overworked, underpaid, and just living a crappy life despite all my efforts going out the window.
Right.
So I decided to look up hypnosis. For years of my life, I'd always put that I want a hypnosis kit for Christmas or for my birthday. And my mom would say, "No, it's not real. Just like magic, Chris, it's not real. You were disappointed by magic when you were a kid. Hypnosis is no different." I'm like, "Yeah, but there's no secret behind it. Like people are just knocking out and acting crazy." So every year, like hypnosis kit, hypnosis kit, hypnosis kit. She's like, every year, it's not real, it's not real, it's not real. So now I'm like completely at the bare bottom of my life. I'm in the fucking alleyway using someone else's laptop, someone else's Wi-Fi. The first day I have off from work in 2 years, first time I'm not crying myself to sleep in a year. And by the way, I wasn't on any drugs or alcohol. I had never touched that stuff. It was just pure emotional pain, organic pain. None of that.
Organic,
None of that
not
synthetic.
man-made.
So I type in hypnosis, and suddenly hypnosis is real. There's pages, articles, videos, people. I downloaded Skype, my friend's computer. I called people all around the world all night. It was 9 p.m. on a Saturday night. I was up till 9 a.m. the next day calling people all around the world. There was Nathan in New Zealand, there was Gil in Israel, there was Leo in Cape Town, South Africa, and there was Gabe in Toronto. And I was just wide awake the whole night calling random people, and they were like, "Who the hell are you?" And I was like, "You don't know me, but I saw your page. I want to learn hypnosis. Can you teach me something?" And all my anxiety and depression and fears were just gone for a moment. I had like this zest for life fill my whole body. And I was like, "What is this?" I remember my eyes feeling like so wide open, like 3 in the morning, like, "Whoa, I feel alive again." Even if I don't find the answers, I had that feeling again. So then they taught me different techniques, like how to sell, how to anchor, how to get rapport, how to fractionate, how to do this, how to do that. And I'm like, this is amazing. So the next morning at 9 a.m., 10 a.m., not like 10 a.m., 10 a.m. on a Sunday, I'm like, I'm going to work. So I run to work. Now I had a bike, but the bike got stolen a month before this happened. So I was just running everywhere. So I run to work. I go to work. I make like $11,000 in sales in like 2 hours.
Wow.
And it was just pulling people by the shirt off the gym floor and putting my office and locking the door and refusing to let them go until I make a sale. And I used every technique that they taught me on Skype that night. 9 o'clock at night, that same night, I had a new apartment that was forged, but like I got it. I had a mattress. Sleeping on a flat surface was phenomenal. I broke up with my abusive, not so healthy relationship because she just came from cheating on me. And I was like, great. Like, wasn't even hurt by it. I was like so empowered by my own thoughts. I was like, it's okay. It's all good. You're forgiven. Just delete my number, my MySpace. We had MySpace back then. Mm-hmm. Anything I own that you have, just keep it, sell it, burn it, throw it away, donate it. I don't care. And I started my life brand new. And then within a month from there, I opened a gym. Well, someone else opened a gym. They invited me to come work with them, made sales immediately. They left the gym. They left everything to me. And then it became my gym for 6 years. And we had great months with no marketing, no nothing. And it was no knowledge of what the hell I was doing, but there was no fear and there was no distraction.
Wow. So that was such a short amount of time, no? Like in that day that you learned hypnosis, or not just that, it was just like being alive again and feeling that feeling. You were so motivated. You just made things happen. You got an apartment by the end of the day. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that was
crazy. The rules. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. Wow. And everything in your life was just very tumultuous, like your relationship, the job. You had no home. Your parents were fighting, like all of those things. What did you think was, what did you think? So you didn't have hypnosis. You weren't hypnotized when you were learning about hypnosis, right? So what happened to you? You know what I mean?
So what happens is, this is what happens to a lot of people that get stuck. You're given a resource. You're imprinted with a behavior, usually from your parents or from your colleagues or someone. And then you're living your whole life from this imprint. That imprint slash emotion, like unconscious resource, will stay there until a better resource comes by. And the better resource has to be more productive and feel better. And if it doesn't have those two things, then it won't stick. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing is, once you get the right resource, the old imprinting gets replaced. You never forget things. You never unlearn shit. This is the one thing that drives me crazy. It's like, if someone tells you you're going to unlearn something, they don't know how the brain actually works. You don't unlearn anything. What a genetic disadvantage that would be if you could just trip over a rock and then forget math. It's not going to happen, thank God. You're not going to unlearn anything. So it doesn't make sense for your brain to let go of resources, even if it wasn't good, because it might apply in the future in other ways. This is like maybe someone like you. It's like you're professional, you're put together, but there's parts of you that grew up in a rough place. So like you also have the energy where it's like, don't fuck with me. You know, you're able to pull that resource back out if you want to, but you don't use it as your primary because it doesn't make sense.
Right. And if, you know, we love being comfortable. And if something is familiar, then it's comfortable, right? And so that's why even though you have changed, there's still some parts of you that would go back to an old thing that doesn't benefit you anymore.
Exactly. So there's no sense for thinking about relapses or like going back to old ways when the new resource feels so much better that your unconscious mind will choose a new resource literally every time. It's looking right to feel better all the time.
Yeah. So is that why smart people do stupid things? Or what is a more like layman way of explaining that situation? Because we've all seen it happen to ourselves and other people. And so why?
Good question. So think of this. Like for me back then, I was a really great athlete. I was like all American in 4 different weightlifting categories. I was a really good musician, but it didn't matter because I couldn't fucking support myself. So that's a problem. Why is that? Why is someone or anyone who is like fully able to do something can't do what they want to do? But then you have other people that don't have the resources you do, but they excel far and above what your goals are. So that's why the phrase, there's someone way dumber and less experienced than you making way more money than you.
Right.
Because they're doing something differently. What is that thing? So over the years, I looked into different healing modalities, like there's hypnosis, NLP, there's EFT, there's all kinds of things out there that help people overcome traumas, emotional and mental obstacles, and so on. And I noticed for all these things, there was like a success rate. Like it didn't always work for everybody. And it was a commodity. So like there's people online talking about their technique being like the most superior technique. And we all know that that can't possibly be true because everyone thinks differently. I remember back in the day, like 15 years ago, I asked my hypnosis teacher, who was like the best teacher I've ever had to this day in anything. And he's a super genius. And I said, you know, there's like only seven things to look for to figure out when someone's actually hypnotized. It looks like that's the most important thing to be skilled at. And he's like, absolutely. And I said, well, is there like a workshop or a class I could take on that? And he's like, Chris, if you find one, let me know because no one's ever taught it. And I'm like, well, that's the actual skill. So like, what are y'all teaching here?
You know?
So I found that there are these blind spots, like in neuro-linguistic programming, which is just another healing modality. They give you a bunch of tools, but they don't really teach you blueprints, how and when to use it. They might teach you how to use it in some ways, but how do you measure the right moment to use it? Which gives it like a failure and a success rate. CBT, psychotherapy, everyone has heard those stories of therapists or like they go to therapy and it doesn't work. It doesn't do a damn thing, but it worked for others. So what's going on there? Same thing with business programs. It's a similar concept. You have someone teaching you something and you have to go and follow it up. Why is that somebody can do much better than you at the same task, but you're smart? There are these blind spots. We all process the world differently.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you process, they are unique.
So how do we... Sorry.
They're good.
So how do we... So if you say that we process the world differently, how do we improve the way we process the world or how we perceive the world in such a way that it would benefit like our best interests?
So let me put it this way. You're kind of born with a default way of processing the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the world is not made for that, usually.
Mm.
So like a good kid might be a bad speller.
Mm-hmm.
But bad spelling is just simply an unconscious resource that can be replaced. So you can mm-hmm. become a good speller. So what makes a smart person, first of all, is somebody who has a lot of good learning strategies.
So it's not IQ. It's not like a thing that you're born with, or, you know, those people who are just sharp, like they're just sharp, like they learn a new language fast. They learn a new sport fast and they learn everything fast and they're articulate and they ask the right questions. These people, we know these people and we call them like intelligent. They're sharp. They're quick witted. Like what makes these people so?
They have some really good learning strategies.
Really?
That's pretty much it. And sometimes they're born with it. Sometimes they learn them by accident. But the ones that are not, like IQ. IQ is simply a measurement trying to quantify how many good learning strategies somebody has.
Hmm.
You could be given new learning strategies and influence your IQ. Therefore, just like learning strategies, IQ is transferable. So genius itself is transferable.
Right. So if you say that a smart person or a sharp person has better learning strategies than most people or most average people, how do you get to more learning strategies? Is it by luck? Like, for example, if you are born to a rich family, then your parents can afford a tutor or more books or something like that. Like, is that the thing? How do you encounter these learning strategies?
So sometimes you learn them by accident. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you learn them by your environment.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, you can be given new ones. Like a professional can create new learning strategies for you. Like ADHD, that's a term they use to describe a bunch of learning strategies that are just mismatched. Changing that can take 15 to 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
and then maybe 3 to 4 weeks of practicing the new learning strategy. But then after that, you're learning things differently, like spelling, memorization. We say we can only memorize seven plus or minus two items at a time for a short-term memory, but that's just because of the more or less default strategy humans are born with.
Yeah. And I think it has a lot to do also with I think there's a little placebo in there too. I used to think I was bad at remembering names, like at a party. And however, it was weird because I have really good memory. I still memorize my ex from like five boyfriends ago. I still have his number in my head. I have his plate number of his car and the boyfriend before that. Like I, it's easy for me to memorize these things and Wi-Fi passwords and everything. But I used to forget people's names and faces in parties like so easily. And I always struggled with it. And I just kind of sat with myself and thought, well, I'm not going to be that person anymore. I remember names. I'm really good at remembering names. And now I'm really good at remembering names. So can that happen to anyone? Can we just decide to be good at something and then it happens? Like, I don't know. I don't understand.
Some of them can. So for example, they give examples of that in the book Psycho-Cybernetics, which is like a level one mindset book that all business owners
right.
are always like, you better read this book. It's from the 50s. It's still amazing. But they talk about like your identity. There's certain learning strategies that your identity is tied to.
Right.
And this all comes back to how people process. Like most people process in a way where if you just simply identify with someone who is good at remembering names, you start putting in more effort on a consistent basis. And effort is one of those things where when you pour effort into something, the effort eventually takes over and now it's effortless.
Right.
Whereas same thing with math. If you think that you're a math person, within about 3 weeks, you can become exceptionally well at math without even studying math. Just by identifying with being a good math person. So like in this perception process I created, I kind of quantified all these different factors that make somebody process differently. And you might have seen this before too. Someone who is an emotional-based person shows specific progress presets, like their progress in life is very obvious. You can predict their next failure and success.
Wow.
But you've seen them in business programs where they come into a business program. They just got sold on the phone. They're super excited. They get into the program. It's been 4 hours. And they go, hey, everyone, I'm new to the group. I'm so excited to be here. I already closed 7 clients in the past 3 hours. I love this group. And it's like, you didn't actually look in the back end of this program at all yet. What made this happen? You didn't learn anything new.
Right.
You were emotionally aligned. And now the thing you wanted to do, you just went and did it. It didn't matter what the how was. Whereas somebody else who is perceptive needs to see things a different angle so that they can make it easier. So for example, when I broke those Guinness World Records, it wasn't that it was any easier for me. It was that I saw a way how it was easy for me. I was like, I can see how this could be way easier than the average person sees this, which made it right. possible for me.
Right. Yeah.
I wasn't a willpower-based person like David Goggins, who was like, that mountain looks impossible. I'm going to go climb it. It was like, oh, wait a minute. I could do that in about 3 to 6 months. If I just did this kind of work and took this many days off, that's a pretty enjoyable process. Why would I not do it? How can I fail at that? I can't. And that's how I was able to do it. Every part of me was 100% like on board. There were zero doubts.
Yeah.
But who's like a perceptive, who's a perceptive versus an emotional person versus a willpower-based person depends on a couple of different things. Those are three different perception processes that like each person will fall into a different category. So like you might be a willpower based person, which says like, it's going to be difficult, but I'll do it anyway. That's like everybody's ideal client. The one who just does what we say, but that's only 33%, like 30, 35% of people. Then you have willpower based people, which say, change the way I look at things and the things I want to do become easy. And that's where you need to focus on changing the metaphor, changing the angle, how they view it. And then all of a sudden they go, oh man, it's so easy. And then emotional based people, they're the most volatile. If their emotions are off, they can't do almost anything. But when their emotions are on, they could do things that the other two categories can't ever think about doing.
Right. So what's the best bucket to go into? Where should most people belong if they want to have a higher propensity of achieving what they believe is success to them?
They should get into the perception process that they are naturally born with. So right. this is where struggle comes from. And we'll use business programs as an example, because I think you and your listeners probably have all been there at some point. I've definitely been there. I've been on both ends of that. You know, we all have. If you hear clients or like people in the business program say things like, "Hey, I'm just trying to friggin' do it, but I just can't figure it out." That's letting you know that they're saying, "Hey, I'm trying to be willpower based, but I'm actually perceptive. And the strategy I'm using to get this thing done, it's not the way I process the world. So now this really simple task becomes really difficult." So struggle happens when you're operating outside of your unique perception process. That's why you can see many different people achieve great things. They just simply own how they process unconsciously. So it's easier for them. So when they look at someone who's failing, they say, "Just do it how I did it."
Yeah.
If you do it the way they did it and you process things differently, and on top of that, you don't even know what those factors even are, it's going to be pretty hit or miss. And that's where luck plays a role most of the time. But with these different factors, I've found out, they're so synergistic. And there's so many different categories of these perception processes that, like, you really can't fail. Even finding half of them just makes you insanely more effective. And right. the really cool thing is, how long does it take to find how you process things? It takes like no time at all. When you share a struggle, I can easily point out, like, okay, this is your strategy. This is the unconscious strategy you've been using. This is where you need to be using it instead. So let's focus on, like, let's reapproach the problem in this way and see how it feels. And usually, from there, you feel more like yourself. You're like, "Oh, this feels like me.
That this feels right to me." Yeah.
Yeah. That feels like effortless now. Okay, good. That's how we need to have it. Or like, "Oh, now it charges me up. Now I'm empowered to do this." Whereas right. before, like, "I don't want to post content. I'm afraid to post content." Or like, "I don't want to hop on more sales calls." And now it's like, "Oh, I can't wait for my next sales call. I am hungry for sales calls. Let's go." And that was like, that was without using hypnosis. That was without using any kind of like, woo-woo. So like hypnosis, I found, has been one of the most effective tools if you use it the right way, but it's still not the be-all end-all. That's just a tool.
Yeah. There's
many different tools. So it's like, if you have a saw, a hammer, and a screwdriver, we're going to build a house. The most important tool you actually need is the tape measure. Because if you cut the wood the wrong way, no matter how good those tools are, you're going to make a really crappy house.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to measure twice. Like, how do you process? Start there. So that everything you do after the fact actually works.
Yeah, that's good. And this is why, you know, most of our listeners are entrepreneurs. And this is why having a coach is really valuable. Because just having someone to bounce off of these ideas, because when you sit with yourself, you can coach yourself into looking at things a different way, developing a different perspective. And people who are more advanced and are more, I would say, self-aware, maybe higher EQ, it's easy to talk ourselves in and out of things. Like for me personally, when I feel kind of down or unmotivated, I know what to tell myself if I was coaching myself. You know what I mean? However, it's always better if you have someone who's coaching you, or at least bounce ideas off, you know, talk to them, and then they can provide a different perspective. Or better yet, if they are, if they're equipped with a lot of tools in their shed, you know, just like you, Chris, then you have a higher chance of really doing what you're supposed to do or achieving what you're supposed to achieve. What are the other ways that, so first let's define smart people, and how do we improve our chances of being quote unquote like smart? Like right now I'm 33, mid 30s. How can I still be smarter? And what can I do? Because they say, what do they say? Neuroplasticity or whatever, your brain stops developing after 25 or something like that. So tell me the truth.
Well, the truth is, like, yeah, neuroplasticity might play a small role in it, but it doesn't stop your brain from taking on new resources. And a new unconscious resource can change your whole quality of life in an instant, and it stays that way. It's all about how is it set up so that the unconscious resource gets into you. And you know what that's like. You've experienced times before where somebody says one sentence and it just sticks with you, and like it hits you. And even you walk away, you're like, why did that hit me? Why am I changed from that one thing? And then maybe like for me, I'm like, how the hell did he do that? Like, did they even know what they just did? I remember I went to a seminar in 2012, and that was a long time ago. So like I was a little more in a drinking phase of my life, the party phase. And I went to this business seminar, and this guy said something. It was right before the day one break for the night. And he was like, don't go. He's like, tonight, go to your hotel rooms. Don't go out drinking. Guys, do you think I drink? I don't drink. I don't drink. And when he said that, I was like, I'm never drinking again. I was like, why am I drinking? Yeah, screw that. And I stopped drinking for like 3 years. Just from that one sentence. That was an imprint. That happens to people. Now,
and there's no telling when these moments happen.
No, there's no telling. This is also why sometimes people or kids develop like really weird emotional or mental disorders out of nowhere, because like the right thing at the right time hit them in the right way. And it led to just that resource, an imprinting getting into them. They received a reward for doing this, a certain behavior. And now they're stuck doing this unconscious behavior. I've seen so many cases of that, of like young people who had bulimia. And they got bulimia because they were in a very emotionally cold household, and there was no big deal, no problems. But then they got food poisoning. And then their mother and father were petting their back and holding their hair back and saying, oh, honey, we love you. You're going to be just fine. And they just got love for the first time while they're throwing up. And then their brain learns, oh, if I throw up, I get love.
Right.
Now they know bulimia is terrible for them. Like, this is bad. Why can't I stop doing this? Well, there's a secondary gain now. Now you have to break that secondary gain, which is much difficult. But at 33, knowing that if you add more resources to your mind, you will absolutely change the quality of your life and beyond that. So the age no longer has an issue with that. I would say like the mind, your unconscious mind doesn't make new learnings. It doesn't make new unconscious resources on its own. You can coach yourself based on the resources you currently have. But if you need more resources, you need to get those from outside yourself, either by accident or somebody has to put them in you. It sounds like a at least screwed up book. Let me put my unconscious resources in you.
That's a good pickup line. This is why you're famous with the ladies.
Yeah. Well, I hear it's the passion, but it could be that too. I'm not sure. But like that works for all ages. Like, for example, for me, it's like I've been doing training jiu-jitsu as a hobby for the past year, but I just came back from the world championships and I did fairly well. And like, how would someone in his 30s, actually same age as you, how would someone in his 30s jump into a sport and then do exceptionally well after a year? I'm not saying I'm the best, but I'm saying I excelled pretty damn quickly. And it has to do with my unconscious resources. I knew that going into this sport. So I knew I was going to do better than most. And now it's like, I don't train that hard compared to other people.
Right.
I just excel well beyond them.
Yeah.
They look at it a certain way. They listen to their teachers. Their teachers only know so much, like how to get good over 20 years.
Right.
But I was focused on how do I get good over the next 3 months?
Yeah.
And then the next 3 months.
Yeah.
And that changed the way I train. This changes the way I excel. I'm no different than anybody who's trying to excel at anything.
Yeah. I like that. You know, definitely luck has a lot to, you know, luck in your environment has a lot to play with it. I think I've been pretty lucky to have, you know, a culture and basically my parents and me being the eldest child, that my parents just believed I could do anything. It was just impossible for me not to win at a competition. And so when I was in elementary, I learned how to read at 2. And that's how I entered college at 15. And I, in elementary school, I remember I was winning like this, in second grade, I cannot forget this. In second grade, I won the science, math, and spelling bee. 3 spelling bees. That's crazy. But my parents it was just because they really believed in me so much. And also, it was because we were poor. And so in my culture, and if you're poor in my country, the eldest child is usually, the parents invest in the eldest child. So when the eldest child finishes college, then they can work for the rest to support the rest of the family, to support my younger sisters in like school. Basically, that's what I did, because unfortunately, my parents died early. But because that was so ingrained in me, it became so easy for me to learn anything. And it was just not in my reality to fail at anything. And even if to other people, something in my life would look like a failure, in my head, it's still a win. And then I would justify why it's a win or something like that. So I think I got really lucky.
So it sounds like that last part you said there is like your attributes to it were always in the positive. So this is from sports hypnosis. They talk about this a little bit, but it's not just exclusive with sports hypnosis. It's one of those things where when you win, you're relating it back to something that's permanent, that's always going to be there. So why did you win? It's because of your work ethic, because of who you are. When you lose something, it's going to be because of something temporary.
Hmm.
Or like, oh, the sun was in my eyes that day.
I like that.
Or like the letters on the test were kind of cloudy. So I couldn't read it right.
I was on my period. What are you talking about?
Exactly. So it's like, I'll be better next time because those those circumstances won't be the same anymore.
Is that a good practice?
Yeah, that's a really good practice. Because think of it this way. Let's say you're a boxer and your goal is to knock out your opponent in the first 15 seconds. It's a really toxic goal because like, what if you don't? The other person is practicing not getting knocked down the first 15 seconds. There's a high chance.
How about not dying? Out. Yeah.
Yeah. Not even Mike Tyson can pull it off sometimes. So if you lose, you can't measure that. You can, if you lose a boxing match, if you say the other guy, I'll say, well, you know what? It's because I'm lazy. It's because I suck at boxing. Now, when you lose, that's proving your point correct. And that just creates a spiral downward. There's a thing called cognitive consistency where your unconscious mind triggers beliefs based on your actions and the context of those actions. So if you're eating a cheeseburger and you say, oh, this is so bad for me, and then you eat it, you're doing a lot worse than just gaining weight. You're way worse. You're draining your self-esteem. And if you're a business owner, your self-esteem is your actual wealth. That's what you actually own. So if you're like, oh, I shouldn't be eating these, and then you're eating those, you're literally directly destroying your bottom line. And any small behavior like that, it might seem small, but to your unconscious, it's like, that's an event. That shit happened. That's how we actually are. And at some point, there's critical mass points where like thousands of self-image beliefs switch over from positive to negative. So like, that seemed like that might seem irrelevant, but it's not, because it ties into attributions. So if you win at something, or like something happens and there's XYZ result, if you're like, that was a win because I learned this and I actually tried.
Right.
I feel good that I did that.
Right.
You have a spiral upward now. Like now your cognitive consistency is like, hey, we're a powerful person. Here's proof in the context of what she just did. Why we're powerful. And now the next endeavor you go on, you actually have more emotional steam moving towards winning.
Right.
Whereas someone else might be like, no, I'm being realistic. The truth is, I wasn't prepared. I wasn't preparing because I've been lazy and I deserve this loss. It's like, well, good luck on your next adventure, because you're going to go into it with like 20 extra pounds of resistance now, just because of what you said to yourself.
Right. Well, and you know what? Like both could be true. Like, for example, I used to play poker competitively, and I haven't played in like a decade in that level. And then I played a really big tournament last year in September, and I knew I didn't have enough practice, and it was like a 2 million tournament. I kind of knew I'm not going to place very well. And I'm not prepared. I didn't actually sleep perfectly. Like, I came into the tournament just like, I'm not really 100% now. And so I feel like I already lost when I came in that room thinking that. And so they had a secondary tournament on the next day called like Second Chance. Basically, everyone who lost on the first day can play another smaller price, like 250K or whatever. And on the first day, I finished like, I think I finished 120 out of 220. And then on the second day, I finished 69 out of like close to 200. So really like big difference, because on the second day, I thought to myself, well, I'm going to sleep well. And yesterday was my practice for today. And I'm just going to have fun. So I was just in like in a better state. And I feel like looking back, I already lost the first tournament as soon as I entered the room. So I don't know what you think about that.
It sounds, even what you just said there, it's like you started with an emotional base and then you walked into your perception process. So you just went from I feel like looking back. So like you start with your feelings first and then you look to how you perceive things. So if you walk into it and you're feeling a certain way, it doesn't matter how good you are, you're not going to do well because your feelings are off in your specific situation. So if your feelings are on, if you spend more time like putting the task aside and just like getting yourself in the right emotional place and then going into it, you would have done far better. And regardless of if it was poker or anything else.
Right, any competition. Yeah. And this
Yeah.
is why I like joining competitions and tournaments. I like practicing. I like and if you lose, quote unquote, in the contest, it is just practice for the next one. It's just like, and it just makes it makes me feel really good even about losing or like not winning. And then if you keep going, then you're not really losing, right? You're just practicing for your best. You're just practicing for your best. Because how many times did you lose, quote unquote, at a thing before you even win it, right? Like that's why we love playing with people who are better than us or something like that. Because that is practice for when you're going to win. I have a question for you, and this is selfish because it's about me. Is it healthy? Is it healthy to stop doing something when you feel like you've reached your peak?
So that is definitely that's an amygdala thought. That's something that a lot of people suffer with. There's two different ways of explaining why that happens.
Yeah.
It only ever happens usually when you get to your goal. Like the entrepreneur that's trying to break 10K months, and then they work with a business coach and they immediately make 40K. They skip over 10K right to 40K. They celebrate for a couple of days and they're like, then they get terrified, and then they shut down and then they backslide and they go back to making nothing right afterwards. It's a massive common pattern with new entrepreneurs. That happens because there's four kinds of fear. And imagine like you want to take this person, and this is the what I had the same roadblock when I came up with the perception process. What happens when you have the answer for somebody, and not only do you have the answer, but you know exactly how to deliver it to them so it actually works and they get the exact thing they came for? They want to go up this hill, and what their promised land is on the top of the hill. And then they get to the top of the hill, and whatever's up there scares the shit out of them, and they run back down the hill. So now, knowing how to coach somebody in a way that's going to make them super effective is not enough. You have to create what I call unconscious support systems. So every call, every session, there has to be something built in place that stops them from backsliding. So the worst thing that happens is that they simply plateau. Plateauing is way better than backsliding. You've seen the trauma coach show up on Facebook after 6 months of being quiet, and they're like, "Hey everyone, I was working through some childhood traumas and I've been gone. I've been sick for the past 6 months. I've been hiding under the blankets, not eating anything but my own piss. And I am back stronger than ever. I'm the phoenix rising out of the ashes." And everyone's like, "Congratulations, you're a phoenix girl." That's backsliding. They made way too much progress too fast and they had nothing to support them. So they slid right back down to childhood. That is not productive. You're an entrepreneur. You don't have time for that. So for someone like you, though, when you get to the top of the mountain, we think that we're good enough. So we go, "Oh, we're good enough. We can take our foot off the gas pedal." And then we start sliding back down the hill. And then before you know it, you realize, like, "Oh, wait, I'm in a deficit now. I need to desperately catch up and recreate momentum." And the truth is, that's a thought that our amygdala creates to keep us safe. It's a very soft complacency.
Right.
So we have to always keep in the front of our minds that we are never good enough in terms of our action, our default actions, not our worth, our default actions. You do things every day that create income, that create impact, that create momentum in your life. Even when you get there, that is the time to continue to double down on those things. That's when you want to really have urgency to never stop. And you, depending on how you process, this might resonate with you, it might not, but if God brought you opportunities and you get to where you want it to be, the thank you back to God is to continue to go. And if you
Right.
don't continue to go, you're literally pissing God off.
Right. Exactly.
And whoever is working with you at the time, you're getting them involved in your shit now. Now they're part of the punishment too. So like, it's a really good reason to like, don't let that soft complacency. Every single day we have to continue to apply pressure. You have to continue to keep your foot on the gas pedal. There's no days off from that. It's not the same as hustling or grinding, but that's just another resource.
Right.
Where, you know, when you wake up, you look at your bank account, and you're like, damn, that's lower than I ever imagined. So you jump out of bed, you get right to work.
Right, right, right.
You want to have that. An unconscious resource for you would be that when you wake up and your bank account is bigger than it's ever been, you get up and you work twice as hard now than you would have if you were desperate. Like, that's an auto suggestion you can put in place.
Yeah. Well, I hope that, you know, in entrepreneurship, that doesn't happen. That would be not honoring what has been given to you. Also, I believe that no man is really like self-made, right? Whatever you make right now, there are probably laws in your country that you were born to that make that business easier for you, or you were born to a certain family that made your education possible, or, you know, so there's tons of things that you didn't control that help you do the business that you do, and you owe it to these resources, right? You owe it to these factors to honor what they have given you, the opportunity that they have given you, and to make the most out of it. Otherwise, like what you said, you use the word God. I think it's kind of like the same, right? But I just kind of made it more realistic by defining it with systems that are in place right now. Like, for example, being born in America is super different from being born in the Philippines. We have much higher barriers to entry in this business. Being able to speak English like this is different. The opportunities I get are different from people who don't speak English like me, who are born in my country. So, you know, I feel like I owe it to these factors that I didn't even work hard for to continue to keep going, because otherwise just be like kind of wasted on me, right? And to add to that, you know, obviously my parents like believed in me, so I'm not going to waste that. And that's the most important thing for me. I don't want to let them down. So,
see, that's something you said there. That's another blind spot that people hear. It's like you're saying that you were born into a specific type of resources. That other people may not have as much, or someone might have even more than you, but you know where yours are at. What creates progress? Like, how do you continue to level up your circumstances in life? Do you go from like zero to a billionaire right away? Do you go from slum to like the poor kid in India all the way up to owning 16 companies? Do you shoot from that from the very beginning? No, you have certain kinds of resources. Not everybody has the right to wake up and be ecstatically happy every single day.
Right.
And that's okay. The billionaire right. Wake up and be ecstatic. That's cool. So can us if we have like everything is comfortable. But if you don't, it's okay. What you want to shoot for is this. Whatever your current circumstance looks like, you want to always be focused on shooting for two steps above that.
Mm-hmm. And
that's something you could bring your entire circumstance up to that level. Your performance can meet you there. Your physiology can be there. Your default thoughts can be there over time with effort. That's doable for any human being, and it's the only thing we need to worry about. That's what creates progress. That's what gets you out of the old circumstance. Like, you're right. Like, every time I work with, for example, when I work with VAs in the Philippines, and I just hear what their life is like, I'm like, damn, that's rough. Like, I can't even help them get out of it because they're just stuck. And I'm like, God bless you. Yeah. I'm like, one family I was working with, I was like, guys, I will move you to freaking Sweden if it's easier to work with me. I will move you and your whole family. I'll find jobs for you guys. I'll set the whole thing up. I'm like, no, we can't because this and that. And I'm like, damn, because their internet kept going out because they live in the freaking mountains. I couldn't even get Elon Musk Starlink to get them Wi-Fi over there because they're in such a secluded area. And I was like, yo, it's hard for you guys. I have all the resources I can give you and I can't even give it to you. Like, that's rough. Like, this, everyone has different things. Doesn't mean it's impossible. But if they focus on just focusing on becoming two steps better than that, maybe moving out of the mountains, you know, maybe moving somewhere else. I don't know. Yeah. So I'm not there. But
Well, it's the same thing. Even in America, there are a lot of people who never even leave their hometown. And sometimes it's just difficult for people to also move. And then there's also people who are like me who are, I don't care where I end up. I'm always going to be running towards whatever is good for me. And I've done all of the hula hoops of the visa applications and paperwork and attorneys. And, you know, like what you said, it's just one step at a time wherever you're at, right? Like, it was a long journey for me. The first time I left the country was 2016. And it was even very ambitious. I went to Sydney, Australia, and for a Filipino, Australia to be your first country that you go to is not even like that easy. I have another question. So it seems like if you think the right way, and maybe, you know, if you're physically able, and if you're an average reasonable person in terms of like IQ or something, it seems like there's always something that you could do to improve your situation. And even probably to even win these tournaments and be amazing in these Guinness World Records. But what if, you know, people talk about this, what if you're depressed? Like, when you're depressed, like, you can't move, the simplest things are so hard to do. I've been there, like, once or twice in my life, but some people go through depression just kind of as a constant state, depression, anxiety. How do you deal with that? And how does that play into deciding on what our next actions should be?
It's a good question. I have a call with someone actually tomorrow for that exact same issue. Mm. So let's use the words like depression, anxiety, ADHD, whatever is in the DSM, which is the psychological handbook of all the problems that are wrong with us.
Right.
DSM is simply a bunch of resources that we simply don't like. That's it. But on every one of those disorders is a positive opposite that we also live by. So for example, I remember a professor told me this years ago. He's like, isn't it funny how you could be diagnosed with depression, but you can't be diagnosed with high confidence? I was like, yeah, it's true. He's like, yeah, no one gives you a pill to lower your self-esteem or confidence because we like those. But depression and confidence, they work off the same mechanism. So there was someone in that same class whose their parents got killed in a car accident. And they're still a young person. And it was their anniversary of their parents dying. I remember a professor said, how are you feeling? Are you okay? Is this a sad time for you? Is this like a depressing time of the year for you? And she says, oh, no, I don't play that. Meaning like, I don't play that program. I don't allow my physiology to go there. When we're younger, if you come from a household of anxious or depressed parents or a relative or someone who was that way, and now you find yourself that way, more than likely, and I say more than likely because it's a disclaimer in case someone's watching who's like, you can't say that publicly, you know. More than likely, wink, wink, you were imprinted. So you have a resource of accessing that physiology and you need a new resource. That's how it comes down to. Really, the first thing you should be looking at is changing your physiology. It's the simplest thing ever and it's free. Anyone can do it. Think positive thoughts until your physiology changes. Like, think of a time you are confident and another time you're confident, and hold that in your mind with as much effort as you need to use until your body no longer feels depressed, even if it's for a few minutes, and then continuously go there. That's one way to do it for yourself. If you want to reach to a higher place, but you're in a low consciousness, you have to break through those lower levels of consciousness. If you look up Stephen Hawking's levels of consciousness, there's a chart there. And if you're in shame or guilt, which is the lowest a human can be in, you'll see some behavior patterns in action. If you go a little bit above that, pride and anger, now you're like hyperactive. And then you're doing all kinds of stuff. You're just wearing yourself. You're on a hamster wheel going really fast. You want to get as high as you can physiologically. And then from that new place, you've now unlocked thoughts and feelings you didn't have back when you were shameful and guiltful and depressed. Uh-huh. Even if it's for 20 friggin' minutes, that's fine. Because now you can see a better way out that actually makes sense. And you want to follow that higher physiology's thought patterns around that new goal. Uh-huh. The next thing you want to focus on, or the other thing you want to focus on, is this. And here's an exercise. And you can do this. Anyone can do this at any point, whether you're healthy or unhealthy, it's the same thing. You close your eyes and you think about, what was the best feeling I've had all week? And you give yourself some time, and then you ask yourself, how many times this past week have I felt that? And you write that down just to see. And then you do the opposite. What was the bottom emotion of this past week? What was the worst I felt? How many times this week did I feel that? And you're going to find that usually the shittier feelings come up pretty often without your control. They just kind of happened. Like, oh, I feel myself, I'm frustrated with business, but it happened 6 times this week, it happened 18 times this week, it happened 7 times a day, something like that. We can call those trauma patterns. And all that means is that you feel more safe being in those lower states.
But
you can't break through higher levels until you start breaking the lower levels first. And the cool thing is, at lower levels, it doesn't take that much, but it does take a lot of willpower. It takes, you have to break that pattern. In hypnosis, when I'm going to help someone break a pattern, it's like I interrupt them. I throw them for a loop. I confuse them for a second in the middle of the thought pattern. They're like, wait, what? Then they come back and they're saying, they say, what, wait, what was I talking about just now? And they forgot the pattern they were about to go into, but we stopped it from happening. Those trauma patterns are like big ass walls that just appear in your life. You're walking through life, everything's fine. Trauma pattern, you feel depressed out of nowhere, wall appears. It doesn't make sense to try to break through the wall. It doesn't make sense walking around the wall, but it does make sense to take a little pickaxe and just like put a little dent in it. And the next time it pops up, put another little dent in it, and another dent, and another dent, and another dent, until the wall crumbles underneath itself because there's so many dents in it that it can't build itself back up again. So for a good 1 to 2 weeks, any one of us can do this. I do like an audit of my life twice a year, just in case they pop up, because the layers get revealed. That's the whole big process sometimes. But it's like, if I'm having a bad feeling multiple times a week, I'm going to do something that's going to shake up my physiology and take me out of that pattern for a good week or two every time I feel those feelings. So for example, let's say I feel depressed 7 times a week. Once a day, I wake up in the morning and I'm depressed. And then again at lunchtime, so 14 times. Then at lunchtime, I feel depressed too. So now I know I'm going to get up and I'm going to either like dance like a friggin' idiot with the biggest, craziest facial expression I can imagine for 5 straight minutes until I'm panting and gasping for air. So I can't even think about feeling depressed. I'm going to take my whole brain, put it on high alert, make it feel threatened with physical exercise so that I can't go into that physiology in the morning and at lunchtime. Or if I can't make a lot of noise, then I'm going to hop in and do a freezing cold shower for 5 minutes. Something's going to take my mind so far off depression, it has to focus on keeping me safe right now, but it's also kind of healthy. So I'll dance, or I'll get into a shower, or I'll work out, or I'll go do sprints for the next 10 to 15 minutes. Whenever those feelings come up, I need to meet it with a pattern interrupt. Whether that happens twice a day or 18 times a day, I have to meet it where it's at and continue to put a dent in that wall. After a couple of days, even after 1 day, that pattern gets so much weaker. Maybe during the week it flares up and it tries to really overthrow you because it's trying to keep its spot of comfort. But you just keep on meeting it with another pattern interrupt. And then after a week, maximum 2 weeks, that low point that you're always at, it gets raised. Now you don't go back down those lower points. Now it's like you're more in hyperactivity, which is still sucks, but it's way better than not doing anything at all.
Yeah.
Then you break those patterns and you keep raising. And now you're just in a high place. You think like a high conscious individual. And now you start seeing why you weren't able to get out of your situation. Now you're like, oh, that's why I couldn't make this. I was trying to push this over here. That makes no sense. I was too desperate. Now over here, I need to do this. I need to call up this person, connect with this person, be an assistant for this person, leverage that over 2 months, talk to their one of their clients, get a job with them, level up, level up, level up. Now I'm making crazy US dollars from a different country, and now I can go wherever the hell I want to go.
Right, right. I think the thing with depression is that moment when you realize that you are depressed and that you can do something about it. Some people feel or believe like that is just not possible. They wear depression like literally like a prison that they can't do anything about. I have experienced like a really deep depression, and I remember this moment clearly. And I stood up and I wanted to work out because I was like, oh, I need to change how I feel. So I'm going to work out. I'm going to go to the gym. So I stood up my bed after being in the bed for many days because I'm so depressed. I stood up and I couldn't tie my hair. I can't. It was so hard for me to figure out how to tie my hair. And I'm like, what is this? What's going on? This has never happened to me. And that's when I realized, oh, this is happening. And then I think I just like went out for a walk. But I think it's knowing this is definitely very useful because you can just do something to change yourself, like like what you said, like a pattern interrupts. I'm going to remember that. That's actually really good. Going for a dance and a sprint is definitely not difficult. And that sounds really, really fun. How do people catch themselves? How do people catch themselves in that instead of staying depressed because it's comfortable? Like, I mean, staying in bed and with Cheetos in my hand and Krispy Kremes, you know, right there sounds very nice.
It does. So that's a couple of things. So that this ties back into your perception process. Like, you're an emotional based person. So when your emotions are off, it's hard to do anything. But when your emotions are on, you can do things that no one can ever, like, it doesn't even matter how you do them. You'll just do them.
Right. Just like those crazy love stories where the guy is running after an airplane, right? It's not logical.
Yeah, that's exactly.
He can do it.
If you talk to someone who's like a David Goggins, a willpower based person, they'll never be influenced by their emotions like you are in that moment. But they have other issues to worry about. Perceptive people, same thing. They can feel the feeling of depression, but it won't limit them that much. Only an emotional based person will have this progress preset of either being like, think of this, a willpower based person makes linear progress in life. If they just wake up at 6 a.m., do the habits, make the phone calls, they're going to continuously ramp up their success over time with very little blips in it. A perceptive person will have like the stock market. It'll go up, it'll take a blip, but it'll always go back up and there'll be a blip again. So you can actually time like mini retirements. In fact, we know people that, two specific people in a particular, one is a willpower based person, another one is a perceptive person, but they both operate that way naturally. So person A, who's willpower, made like 11,000 his first month, then 25,000 and so on and so forth. He hit a million at the end of December. The other person, who's perceptive, made $285,000 the first 2 weeks of January and then moved to Bali and then made nothing till April. But in April made 500,000. So it made sense in different ways. One had a solid lifestyle where he never missed the gym. And the other one went to the gym like maybe three times during that time, but it worked out differently.
Yeah.
So if you're an emotional based person where like the emotions can overcome you like that, then you definitely want to make sure that your emotions is your number one priority before doing anything else, no matter what your endeavor is.
I like that. That's very useful. So quick question. Do drugs for depression work? Do you recommend them?
I'm not for or against drugs. They're really good for some people that are in like dire situations, but this is one thing that they normally do. Not all drugs, but this is a whole class of drugs, usually for ADHD, but the same with anxiety. They ramp up you have two nervous systems. You have your sympathetic and your parasympathetic nervous system. Your sympathetic nervous system is your stress response. That's your anxiety. It's your fight or flight. That's your alertness. And then you have your parasympathetic, which is your rest and digest, calm down, alpha waves, learning state. Mm-hmm. If you're super high strung, for example, they'll give you anti-anxiety medication. And that usually ramps up your nervous system even more than already is. And then your body has this defense mechanism where it turns on the parasympathetic, the rest and digest, to bring you back down. And that's what keeps you in an anti-anxiety place. So there's a similar mechanism that happens with depression. They give you a little bit less than that, and it brings you up a little bit. So now it's like you can't be depressed if you're in high alert. Mm-hmm. So if someone needs those, by all means, go for it. But treat it like, I would say, if anything, treat it like a season, like a project. Something that you're not planning on being on for a very long time. Don't let a pill do all the things that you as a human being should be doing for yourself.
Right.
Another thing you said there is like, how do you know? How do you know when you're even depressed? Or how do you become aware of that? Some people are associative and some people are dissociative. Associative mean like they're in their body. They can feel everything. So when something changes, they're like, what is that? I felt that. Those people normally don't like things like scary movies because they can feel what goes on the TV. They're like, oh, that feels icky. Whereas someone who is dissociative, they need to have like action movies, crazy experiences to simply start to feel because they're outside their body. So a good practice if you're an emotional based person is to step into your body and actually feel what's going on inside there. Like if you close your eyes and imagine yourself, if you see yourself from the outside, you're a dissociative person probably most of the time. It could also be situation specific. So you step into your body and you see the world through your closed eyelids. You feel the chair you're sitting in. and you feel into your heartbeat, you feel into your breath, and then you start to feel what your emotions actually feel like. Mm-hmm. When you're in your body like that, emotions are heightened. You can actually sense them more. That's why people that are dissociated are usually a little bit more depressed. People that are associated are usually a little more anxious because they feel so damn much. You know,
right.
If you're outside yourself, you could be in a, like police officers, for example, they're taught to be dissociated. So they could be in dire situations and they're just cool. So they're calm and cool. They didn't get Navy SEAL level mindset training. No, they're just taught to like check out. They're like, oh, right. This person's dying. All right, well, terrible. We got a dead body here. Okay, goodbye. You know, they're just like, because they've seen it so many times. They're just like, they're thinking about what they're going to have for dinner because it's a job to them.
Right, right. Yeah.
So there's, when you're dissociated, you can get through things better. But when you're associated, you can feel them more. And when you're like,
and you can choose between these two states.
Yeah. People are normally default in one or the other. You can literally train yourself to be one or the other because you can be in one or be in the other pretty much whenever you want. So it takes like maybe 2 to 3 weeks of practicing that. And now you can switch. Like to be more motivated, you want to be more associated. To calm the frick down, you want to be more dissociated.
I like
to
that.
Learn more, you have to be more associated. To get through hard emotional times, you need to be more dissociated. I don't mean check out, but I mean getting through a hard time.
Compartmentalize, yeah.
Yeah, compartmentalizing can be a really healthy thing sometimes.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I totally agree. Because it was fascinating for me at the saddest point of my life, I actually made the most amount of money. And when my mom passed, that was the year I made a ton of money. And I think I was so dissociated. And I was also kind of like, and we didn't even need money that time. But I think I was just, maybe that's how I dealt with it too. Like I just kept, you know, like pushing it under the rug or something until I got like proper therapy and actually hypnosis. I got with this guy who was, I don't know if you know him, Clay Moffat. I think I worked with him like twice, and it was kind of my last resort. Like hypnosis was my last resort because I did all the things. I did the workouts, the meditations, the eating right. I did all the things, and then it still didn't work out. And I'm so happy hypnosis definitely worked out. So I'm a big believer. Another question. So we have all these tools, and then right now, even in social media, people are more comfortable talking about, you know, cognitive states or being depressed or how to, you know, self-help, self-care, all these buzzwords. But why are there still people who do quote unquote stupid things over and over again? And it seems like they don't learn from their mistakes. Like we all know someone who keep making the same mistake, dating the wrong person, or like going job after job with kind of no direction, or someone who says they're going to go to the gym next month but never does. What is happening to these people?
So this is what's going on. There's all this self-help stuff out there. There's so many experts and gurus out there who's claiming like this works the best, this works the best, this works the best. And then the same people that are interested in those things still have so many other things to work through. So, and why do they keep making the same mistakes if they're into all this stuff? They have every resource imaginable at their fingertips for the first time in human history, but yet they're still making the dumbest of all mistakes. Like dating the wrong people, like how, like everyone sees it but them, you know? And that was me for a long time, not gonna lie, you know? And that's okay. But you have to replace the unconscious resource is the thing that they're running from. That they're operating off of, I mean. Mm-hmm. And the way they process, it doesn't matter how many resources get, like there's resources being tossed at their face, but like, you know that the gif of the girl who's like, I'm one of the guys, and it's like a bunch of hot dogs hitting her face.
Right.
Like that. All these resources are just bouncing off their face, and nothing's actually being consumed. So they know all this stuff up in their head, but nothing's actually getting into their unconscious. Reading it on a book doesn't make that resource appear in your unconscious and you live your life from that state. Even psychedelics, we always see people talk about like how they love doing psychedelics and they learn all this cool stuff. But a majority of those people that take those things, drugs like that put you in a very feminine state. So you receive all this good knowledge, but it doesn't give you the masculinity to go and carry it out. And the one who can carry it out, we all know those influences by first and last name because they just make it work. They have a team that helps them put it into place. So that's just a form of suffering, knowing all this stuff and then not embodying it. But it makes sense because there's not the right unconscious resource in place. You can't make your own learnings. The unconscious mind doesn't make the new learnings. So if you're trying to learn to date better, for example, you do the, what makes the most sense to cut all corners and get to that where you want to be, you need someone who knows how you process the world and then put that research that you want directly into your unconscious. Like you went to a hypnotist, and it's funny, I had a bunch of people that like connected me with him, and they're like, "You, I saw those guys speak. You guys are so alike. You guys made really cool systems." And we talked for a little bit, and he's a cool dude. You know, but we're all like, we're both like, why should we meet up? That makes no point.
Right. We should like, just meet other people who need our help, not each other.
Exactly. Well, I'm like, you're cool, I'm cool, but hey, man, good luck.
That's so funny.
Like, we're on a mission. Like, we get it. You know, it's cool. It's cool respect. But how someone processes makes the difference. So like, if you're trying to be like David Goggins, but you don't process like David Goggins, which you wouldn't even know that, because if David Goggins speaks, everything he says should go right into your unconscious, but it doesn't. And anyone can go to the gym at 5 o'clock in the morning for a couple of days, but then your old habits kick back in, your resources kick back in, and that's your life is run by resources, your unconscious resources. So, for example, being introduced to a feeling that you get when you meet a new romantic partner and making that feeling really sensitive to be like, ooh, that doesn't feel good. Ooh, that feels really bad. What am I thinking dating this person? Rather than like, this person is mysterious. I feel moved by them. It's like, no, right. you feel agitated right. by them. You just haven't tuned into that yet. Like there needs, it makes the most sense for someone to help you feel into what that resource is, turn it into pain, and then add a new resource that feels so much better, which is going to be dating a different type of person.
Right, right. And that comes with practice, right? Like at the start, it feels a little unnatural. Is that correct? But eventually, does it become easier? Like if you're if you keep dating the wrong person, you know, let's just use that as an example. If you consciously make an effort, do you somehow improve the choices you make after that? Maybe the next guy is not going to be as bad, and then the next guy is not going to be as bad. You're close to like Prince Charming. Or can you just switch it like that?
You can switch it like that. Like what you're saying there is a common misconception, is where people treat the brain like it's the body, but it's not. If you break your leg in an instant, it's going to take a number of months before it heals, and you have to practice walking on it and strengthen it and go to PT, and over time you just get better and better. But like in this room right now, I'm in my office. If I destroy this room, it might take me 2 minutes to just, maybe less, to destroy, put holes in the wall, turn things over, just rip everything apart. It's going to take me a bunch of hours to repair all that. But in your mind, if you imagine this room, or even your room, just imagine making a total mess. And now in an instant, just clean it up. Like your thoughts change the way it looks in an instant. Even the resources are like that. When people think like, oh, I need, like there's two different, there's adding resources, but then there's also breaking cycles, which is like, that's like the treating the brain like it's the body, which is useful in other situations, but you don't have to force yourself to date the altar boy and then feel boring for 6 months and then date, you know, the altar boy's father, who is like even more of a man, and then be more bored, and then level up to like the actual reverend. Yeah.
Is this your favorite like porn plot? Like,
oh, God. I was more appeasing to your type, not mine.
Is the title of this movie Reverend Chris or something? I don't know.
Yeah, Reverend Bulger with a bulge.
but instead,
you can find a set of features that you find in a man or a woman, whatever, that you know are healthy, and then you can link it back to something that feels really good when you see those. So you don't have
right.
a boring face. You might have a ghost feeling of like, wow, this person's not toxic, and I don't feel that same thrill.
Right.
But that's okay. It's not the same as being bored. So like you'll work through those. That's okay, but it's not the same as breaking a cycle. Breaking a cycle is where it's like, I have this gut reaction and I'm not going to do that on purpose. I'm going to hold on to it and then I don't do it. And then over time, I'll do it less and less and less and less and less.
Yeah.
And that's good too, but that leaves room for relapses.
Right, 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 right. Yeah. It's like these women who like what you said, like, oh my God, but he's boring though. Like, yeah, because he's safe and he doesn't lie to you, and you know, and you know, like you're not, you know, you're not going crazy trying to think where he is and if he's lying to you or something. Like obviously, when we were younger, we were made to believe that the the hot guy, the bad boy, is just like so hot, and like it's a triumph if you catch this guy, and he commits to you. Like, it's just so funny. So I think we also need to be careful of the media we consume, because it shapes our beliefs, right? But at least when, if we're adults, we have like more control of that.
Well, that's a, you've experienced this before. I'm sure I definitely have, where like you go after the bad person, right? You know they're bad, but something about them is like they have something that I want that I don't have. Or it's like I see something in them that I kind of want to tap into, and they have that. So if I get that, then I can experience that.
Right.
And then after a while, you grow a little bit and you grow out of that person. And then you look back years later and you're like, that person had some self-esteem issues. That's why they were the way they were. And you're right. Like, I didn't have the self-esteem back then. And that's why, but they had a little bit more than I had.
Right.
That's why I wanted to
latch
be
onto them. Yeah. Yeah.
But now that you've given yourself that resource of higher self-esteem, you'll never go back to a person like that.
Right. Right.
So now if you're attracting bad candidates, what about them do you think you need? And then realizing like that person's missing something. That's what's causing the spike in emotions.
Uh-huh.
And then there's something lacking in you. You can give yourself that new resource. And now your whole perception towards those kind of people changes.
Right. Absolutely.
You have a need that was met now. And now it's like, why would I bother going with that or that? Because it's like, I want to now this other way, this healthy person, that's sexy. Because I have all my needs met. And they have their needs met. That's what I'm all about.
Yeah. They're going to add to me. Like, they're not going to, you know, I'm not looking for someone to fill in something that was lacking. Like, there's nothing lacking with me, but they're kind of like a great addition, you know, something like that. I think as you grow older and we mature more, that's hopefully how we deal with relationships. It has been super duper nice. And I'm going to ask one last question for our listeners. So you've shared a lot of really amazing things today, Chris. And before this last question, I want people to really know, how can they find you? How can they start working with you if they're just curious about hypnosis and if they want to see how it could help them in their lives? Guys, I really, really recommend it. So tell people how they can find you.
So my website is under construction right now until further notice, but the best ways to find me are two avenues. One is through Facebook, and this is like facebook.com/, and I can't change this for some reason, facebook.com/ChrisTheHypnotist. That's from an old stage limited shows. And then on Instagram, I am Chris Bolger, PhDC.
Mm. All right. Chris Bolger, PhDC on Instagram. And look for Chris the Hypnotist. Is that what you said? Facebook.
That's the URL, but Chris.
Oh, that's the URL.
But on Facebook, my regular name, Chris Bolger. And again, it's Folgers Coffee, but with a B.
Yeah, that's right. And you can also, I'll also link it in the show notes. So if you want to find him, guys, just look for Chris Bolger on Facebook and Instagram. And he always shares about what he does and the clients that he works with. And there's always a lot to learn from this way of thinking. Like even today, just sitting here for like an hour, I learned a lot. So thank you so much, Chris. So let's leave our listeners with some really, really really good parting words. So if there are three ways, or there are three things that we can do to just improve on ways that we make decisions, what are these three things?
If there's just three that can increase your decision making.
Top of your head. Yeah. So that's, we can stop smart people from doing stupid things again.
All right. So these might seem like hippy dippy, but they're really not. This takes people months to learn, but it's, just get a head start by starting now.
Yeah.
One, above all else, is self-gentleness and kindness.
Mm.
That is so important. If you're going through anything in life where you feel like it's insurmountable, or if it's like, let's say you have a specific issue and you've hired a bunch of specialists and experts and no one has been able to help you, you're not lost. The number one thing that has to happen, you need to have deeper levels of gentleness and kindness. You need to have self-awareness. And some people are so complex that it's not a bad thing, but the world's not made for you. So there is no one healing modality. There is no one thing that you can just tap into and heal yourself. It's going to be a bunch of things. It's going to be very customizable things. Just because you're complex doesn't mean that you're it's a bad thing, because that also means that you're able to access a larger amount of love that any other person on the planet can't even fathom. So that's your reward for all your hardships. And you're going to get that goal, you're going to get that reward a lot faster when you dive into deeper levels of gentleness and kindness. Even if you're kind now, I challenge you to go even deeper, because if you feel you're getting stuck, it's going to be linked to more kindness and more gentleness. That's going to help move your behaviors around. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you have feelings that pop up throughout the day, like trauma patterns we talked about, you got to break those. It's maybe someone gave them to you, cool, but it's our responsibility to break that. And it only takes 1 to 2 weeks. And it instantly levels up your ability to think and see your future more clearly. That's the second thing. The third thing I would say, to consistently tap into more of those parasympathetic states, meaning like relaxation responses. If you're just go, go, go all the time, you need to train your nervous system to be in those parasympathetic states. That's going to be where your inner intelligence is. That's going to be where your intuition is. And you hear people all the time, they get these visions. Visions normally come, that ones that are actually true for us, they come in your parasympathetic. Parasympathetic is where healing happens, physically and mentally and emotionally. So if you're go, 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 even for me, I tell everyone I work with, it just as a bare minimum, you got to set aside like 2 20-minute periods per day where you're just simply relaxing as deep as you possibly can. And then afterwards, go about your day. You're going to have
What if I fall into a nap?
That's cool too. That's totally fine. But set a timer.
I fall asleep so easily. I fall asleep so easily. Honestly, sometimes I fall asleep in a sauna.
That's wow. That's a different kind of problem to have.
You're gonna come to the I don't drink coffee. That's why. Like sometimes I have to catch myself. You know, this actually happens to me. I try to meditate every day at least 10 minutes. And sometimes I'm so relaxed. I'm like, oh, I'm starting to get sleepy. And then I have to wake up and drink a pre-workout.
Whoa, that's a different level of parasympathetic. That's good. That's pretty good. I would challenge you to stay a little bit more awake. Just like try to like be in a position where you can't fall asleep, like sit up with no back to your chair or something. Like right. I get the same weight. I'm at the point now too where I fall asleep. It takes me 30 minutes to meditation. I'll start like doing this. I'll start moving forward. And I'll go, and I'll like jump up, and like that's how I know. Okay, I'm done meditating.
Right, and then you get that adrenaline rush. You know what? That might be helpful because I have like a really good view in front of my balcony with like trees, so I get fresh air. I should just like do a standing meditation now. Let you know how it goes.
Yeah, but don't lean over. Don't lean over the balcony edge.
Oh Jesus! Oh, it's just second floor, so you know I'm insured, so it might still work.
Yeah, make some money out of it.
Just kidding. All right, so those three things are, first of all, I really want you guys to remember this, because if there's one thing that I want you to take away from this conversation, definitely these three things. First is practice self-gentleness and kindness. Be kind to yourself. There's always different ways of looking at things, and there's always a way to look at it in a kind way that you don't have to say bad things about yourself. You don't have to describe yourself in such a way that you're evil or something like that. There's always a kind and gentle way of looking at it. Number two is you should break patterns physically, right? There's a way for you to break certain patterns. If you catch yourself in certain bad patterns, try to break away from it. Do something different. Maybe do something crazy, like break into a dance or go on a sprint, or I don't know, slap your own face, but you might start liking it. So be careful.
Cold showers.
Cold showers. I like that.
A little less erotic.
Yeah. Well, I think I read somewhere about even like putting your face in like ice or something like that. Like that helps too.
Oh yeah. No, you want a full body, like take your whole mind off of the depression, for example. And you're just like, oh God, I gotta stay alive right now. That's the level you want to be at.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Well, I'm really scared of that, but I do cold plunges sometimes. And lastly is try to engage your parasympathetic nervous system. Is that correct? Did I word that right? Yeah. And try to develop certain habits in your life that help you become relaxed. Actually, one thing that I started practicing is I've actually noticed that I eat fast. And it was because I've spent over a decade in the events industry where I'm always moving. And so I'm used to eating my lunch in the car or something. And then one time I realized I'm eating so fast. And then it makes me not enjoy the food. So I started literally consciously just chewing slower and enjoying my food more, and help me make more relaxed. And throughout the day, you'll also notice yourself breathing like shallower. So even just taking time to breathe deeper, I think that helps too. It helped me and helped me become more calm and think better. So those are my simple ways. I'm not a Guinness World Record holder.
Those are good. Those are really good ways. Eating slower. There's an exercise that my old business partner talked about. It's called the Three Raisins Technique. Mm. Basically, you set a timer for 30 minutes, but you give yourself an hour and you get three raisins. And you give yourself 10 to 15, like let's say 10 minutes to eat one raisin.
What? That's so hard.
Approach it as if you've never seen a raisin before and you spend time inspecting it, smelling it, feeling the texture of it, realizing there's like so many shades of purple on that damn thing. And it's actually pretty smooth. What?
I'm going to foreplay a raisin.
You're going to foreplay a raisin for 10 minutes.
What? That's the title of your book. Foreplay a raisin. How to enjoy life.
How to engage
your parasympathetic.
How to foreplay a raisin in 2023.
People are going to ask what the gender of the raisin is at this point in time.
Yeah, there's going to be 86 genders for raisins.
For the raisin. All right. Well, thank you so much, Chris. You guys, please follow Chris. You're going to be doing yourself a favor. Thank you so much. And see you next Monday for another episode of None of Your Business. Bye.
Bye. Thanks so much.
So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have two conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.